This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together.
Hello and welcome to Dojo Live this Thursday, February 1st, 2024. We're kicking off the month. With a really interesting conversation all about subscriptions. Joining me to do that is my co-host, America Guerrero.
Hi there. Happy that it's finally Friday. No.
Friday. We're all messed up. It's not the week. Friday. It's the month. We wish it was Friday, right? And of course, here to show and join and talk all about Subscriptions Without Borders is John Sarver, who is the Innovation and Technology Consultant at SAS Logic. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you both for having me. I look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun because, like I said, I love the title and I had a heart for it too because it goes in line with what we do here at Dojo Live, which is tech without borders. So we're talking about subscriptions without borders today, and more specifically what that looks like in the travel industry, right? With the travel industry being an early adopter of subscription revenue. And I think what comes to mind is this idea of timeshares, right? Mm-hmm. But the reality that buying preferences are changing. I think that's going to be a real topic of conversation today. And then what that means for the industry and you know, what it means and how we can adapt to the idea that travelers are changing, you know, how they buy. But before we get into that, John, we'd like to know your story a little bit. You know, what's your story, your passion, and what's led up to your time with SAS Logic?
Yeah, thank you for the intro. So I born and raised in Ohio. I love to start with that because I think my Midwestern values are key to who I am. After college, I decided to spend a few years in the military. So I served in the U.S. Navy as a logistics officer for the Navy and got to travel and see the world. My Navy time was blessed with trips to Australia, Seychelles, Hong Kong, Singapore, Hawaii more times than you would ever want to go to, believe it or not. And so my passion for travel is in part from that experience. You know, growing up in the Midwest, you get a feeling and understanding of the world that's about this big. And then you join the military and you start to realize how little we learn as Midwestern students about, you know, just different cultures and whatnot. So being exposed to that while in the military was an amazing formative part of my journey. Coming out of the military, I thought it'd be fun to work for big companies and quickly realized I don't work well with big companies. So I found tech and smaller scale startups to be a little bit more exciting, a little more in line with kind of what I'm looking for out of a career. So I here in Columbus, Ohio, we actually have a pretty robust startup ecosystem and some really strong companies that have kind of led and grown that ecosystem. And I've been lucky enough to be involved with a few companies here in town, currently with a product called SAS Logic. And SAS Logic, basically, we want to make companies, especially in the travel industry and other industries, we want you to be able to focus on delivering the products and services that you want and not have to worry about collecting the money. You know, how you do invoicing, how you get the money into your pockets. We want to take all of that off your plate so you can really just focus on making sure your customers have the best experience possible. And that is sort of the basic story of what SAS Logic is.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for kicking that off and you know, identifying the problem that you are solving as a company. So I guess we can kind of dive right in. I mean, we get it, Subscription Without Borders, how that translates right to the travel industry in particular. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about what it means in terms of subscription revenue and buying preferences. So I don't know if you want to kick it off at that subscription revenue piece and then talk about how, you know, what has shifted in terms of buying preferences and why.
You know, I love the tagline that we sort of came up with about how, you know, the OGs of recurring revenue are timeshares. They've been around for a long time. The travel industry has always been creative and innovative and finding ways of getting people to be sticky, to be a part of their ecosystem for a long period of time. And at the core of all subscription and revenue management, stickiness is what's important. Can you deliver a product month over month that someone's gonna wanna continue to add their capital to and be a part of that group? So I'd love to talk about the travel industry when it comes to subscriptions because I feel like it's the group that gets it the most and is also the one that is always out there trying to experiment and see what we can do to really bring customers the enjoyment they want on a consistent basis. As a consumer of travel, I think about it a lot. And I think that's a pretty common thing we are always like, what's the next vacation? What's the next trip? Where can we go with our kids? What do our kids want to do? And that means that it's something that is constantly being talked about, evaluated within family dynamics or individual dynamics. And so it leaves a lot of room for companies to be at the right point in time to get their message from a travel provider standpoint to potential customers, because people are constantly shopping. But I do think buying habits have changed to kind of get to that point. And if at any point you want it to stop, just go ahead. But when we look at buying habits, timeshares have come and have sort of gone while they're still there. Airbnbs have sort of taken that market and said, you don't really need to do a timeshare. You can just go get a great house on a beach whenever you want. Go visit Cancun and just a week before find a spot and fly in. So it is time to kind of rethink how the travel industry, positions itself and how it can become sort of that sticky subscription-y model that gets people that are constantly thinking about travel, constantly planning for their next travel, and having them be a part of your ecosystem so they ultimately travel with you and the destinations and locations you're presenting.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think, the timeshare or even the idea of buying a property and then turning it yourself into something like an Airbnb, which then eats into what used to be like a timeshare model. So what do you suppose, Airbnb aside, what else has caused this sort of shift in buyer preferences? Is it related to the pandemic? Is it related just to the world getting smaller and smaller in terms of our accessibility to what's out there with the internet and personalization and social media? What else is influencing this?
I think there's two factors. There's many factors, but two that I think I always like to talk about. One is the fact that the concept of SaaS businesses and SaaS applications have actually removed a barrier of having to go to an office. And so when we talk about travel now, SaaS tools like SaaS Logic and SaaS tools like HubSpot and other CRMs and the ability to do your work from anywhere because of SaaS allows that anchor of I've got to drive into my office up the street to disappear. And so when we look at travel and SaaS, that's a whole sector of remote work, content creators that are able to go out and be and do and experience and then present to the world the output, whether it's for your company or for others. And I think that's just one of the biggest changes. I also think from a buying habit standpoint, just the internet itself has provided us so much more information. And it allows for us to, think about Cancun, think about, St. Croix, St. Thomas, and research those trips and spend time, again, gathering everything you need to make sure your next vacation is exactly what you want it to be.
Or even to think about places you don't even have in mind. I didn't even know that existed. That's a country, right? How many times has that happened to you? Yeah,
YouTube has an amazing algorithm to remind me of places I should probably go visit.
Wow. So in the industry, there is this used to idea that, thank you, timeshare, for it. But I'm trying to understand how this work. You mentioned that with businesses, they don't need to worry about money. They need to focus on delivery. But how do you do that?
Let me restate the kind of the point. With SaaS Logic, and I hope I'm going the direction with your question, but with SaaS Logic, our goal is to allow businesses to focus on what you want to be doing as a merchant. The collecting of the money, the creating of the invoices, the communication between the invoicing platform and the customer and your accounting platform, we want to take that lift. So if you want to just be focusing on delivering great travel packages or delivering a great experience, you can worry about all of that because we'll take the revenue collection aspect off of your plate. So that was kind of the meaning of that statement.
Perfect. Maybe can you dive into a few examples of how SaaS Logic works, particularly in the travel industry, or what types of vendors? Is this geared more toward hotels? Is this geared toward more, the travel side in terms of airlines, trains, buses, car rentals, experiences? We had a great show yesterday talking, just about experience providers as well. All of the above. What are some use cases?
The answer is all of the above. One of the things, when SaaS Logic was created, when our CEO Rao Chajarla had the initial spark to build his own version of this, because it's a crowded space. You know, we're not the first to come into it. We know that. One of the approaches we took was actually from advice that we got from the HubSpot founders, if you guys are familiar with the CRM. And it was contradictory to what everyone else says, but it for some reason sticks to us like, yeah. HubSpot, if you remember, they kind of went very broad and they said, we're here for small businesses that just need to get going and we're going to be your platform and we're going to grow with you. And so we're taking that approach. So we're probably not the best fit for American Airlines, you know, Delta, probably not the good fits for us. But if you're like a young travel experience based company and you want to build a community that you're able to monetize that relationship over time, I think we're a great solution because our platform allows you to be very creative and innovative in how you create your packages and your plans, your products and your plans, and then ultimately invoice your customers. And so you can dream it, we can help build it. Excuse me, if you dream it, you can help build it. I'm losing my voice, I apologize.
No, no problem at all. It happens to me too. So in terms of, you know, this stickiness and this creativity that we're allowed to have and payment solutions and making the invoice easy, mm-hmm. does this include, I think this is sort of up and coming now, particularly in travel, this buy now, pay later? Is that something that you're working with? Because, you know, I can remember, to me, as we talked about pre-show, and a lot of people in the audience know, I'm an expat. I spent, you know, I'm from the United States, live in Mexico, came here in my early 20s. And here, there was this concept that I had never even realized yet. I was also a young adult, but that was this like months without interest on your credit card and things. And mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, what? This is like a thing. And I didn't know. I don't even think it existed in the United States back then. And you know, more in developing countries and places, it's this concept that's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think it's relatively new in the US. And I think in terms of travel, this is a game changer because it allows people to do what they dream and want to do, but do it now. Yeah. And it, you know, and it, so I guess, yes. How does buy now, pay later work into this?
So we love the concept of buy now, pay later. You know, here in Columbus, Ohio, one of the bigger players, Klarna, has their US headquarters. And so, you know, we're familiar with the offering. And then obviously I'm sure everyone's seen Affirm and others during the checkout process. And you nailed it. It is a game changer. The ability for them to calculate risk at the speed they do and then provide almost what I consider almost like a microloan. It's an amazing way to, you know, bring in those young kids that want to travel, but, you know, their income is going. They haven't had a chance to save. Like my generation, I'm a little bit older. We were taught to save first and then spend, you know, and that's the sound way of doing it. But no business does that. When you look at the large corporations, they all find ways of borrowing other people's money to make themselves more. And so, you know, there's a lot to be said about what has, you know, obviously come from other countries and now getting to America. The concept of buy now, pay later, getting those microloans for your experiences and then paying them off over time. It's going to be transformative. And we're in line with building out the platform to make sure we can capture that.
Perfect. You know, and in terms of how else you're meeting the traveler and the business, what kind of innovative ways have you come up with in the last, you know, few years, and what's maybe in the pipeline as well? I know now buy now pay later is in the pipeline, but how does it work right now?
So right now, without buy now pay later, you know, we'll work with agencies to kind of put together whatever type of package that they want to have. And so, you know, and not to punt or have a definitive answer, but we really enjoy deep conversations with our merchants who are our customers about what their customers are wanting to experience, because that's going to allow us to figure out how to best serve our customer to their end ultimate customer. So I'm going to repeat that because I don't think I said it great. So I think that it's important to think about how our merchants' customers, so, you know, the people that subscribe to SaaS Logic, their customers are the most important part of our business. And so without them having a great experience with our merchant doesn't need to send an invoice. And so we've created a system that truly allows us the flexibility to work with our merchants to understand what they want their customers to experience, and then via our customer portal or custom pricing plans, allow them to deliver what they need to their customer.
So. Interesting. So, and that's a really interesting point. I don't think it's something that we think about or have heard enough on the show, or maybe businesses think about, is what my customer needs in order for me to provide that service, and then how I can find somebody to help me build that, right? Yeah. What are you hearing that these customers are wanting and needing, and how have you maybe seen that shift over the last few years? Where is it headed?
Buy now, pay later. We've already talked about it, so I won't go in too deep there, but I think clearly that's going to be something that continues to grow, especially here in the United States. The ability to do usage-based pricing, I think, is probably one of the biggest switches. When I was talking to folks in the energy industry, of all places, and this Gen Z younger kids, they would prefer to buy almost a prepackaged set of hours and then overages be billed based on electric usage. So not hours, but wattage. And so it's interesting to think about the different ways that you can create packages for this generation that, they don't need a single sticker price. They're okay with more complex billing, to where you're buying, I'm not very good with the energy, but you buy a certain number of hours of electricity, and then once you use your quota, you'll get billed for what you use after that, but you only pay for what you end up using. So I think that's going to be one of the biggest changes.
That makes a lot of sense. And there's lots of applications there too, like even in mobile.
Mobile payment,
water, I don't know. Yeah.
And then FedNow is a U.S. program that the government's putting together to allow for seamless, low-cost transfer of funds between connected accounts. And so I think there's a lot there as well that will reduce some of the costs, because all of us that are in business know credit cards carry fees anytime you do credit card processing. And everyone would like to capture some of that margin back towards the business. So if there's more low-cost ways of transferring money between accounts, I think that's going to be a change that's coming in the next few years as well.
I'm not sure if you already discussed about paying when you are already earning. So is that like a different model from what we are talking about?
I don't know if I understand the question.
I saw it in your website and I was like, okay, is that a different pricing model that you offer, that it's different and now you're offering in the market?
I'm not fully sure what the question is, so I apologize. I think one of the things that we're doing from a pricing strategy standpoint that I think is important is we're going to charge our merchants based off of how much revenue they use in the system. So we want to be a usage-based platform, so that way our merchants only have to pay for how much money they're bringing into their business. So we become a part of their financial calculation and not necessarily a burden. So they don't have to worry about a monthly fee of $500 a month if they're not bringing any revenue. So if they're, we'll take and work with them to make sure we're getting, we're part of their growth plan. And as they build their business and as they scale and earn more revenue, then it's obviously beneficial for us. It really ties and aligns our incentives together.
Okay. Yeah, you understood my question. Thank you.
Okay.
Perfect. And, that leads me to a really interesting point, and that's sort of this trust base element. And I hear that happening in SaaS Logic and your models, right? You have, some stake in the game. I don't know what if that's the right, there's a word for this and I can't remember the expression, but skin, that's the word. As you can see, I'm a real athlete.
I'm like a snake in the game. I like snake in the game. It's a little more dangerous. Adds a little bit of excitement.
Skin in the game. And I think that really leans into what shift we've seen in all kinds of industries, right? And that's this trust, this personalization. Sure. I'm willing to see how this works out, because it's either a win-win or a lose-lose. And it gives this idea that you're going to be actually working, I wouldn't even want to say for me, but with me, right?
I like four. I think four is the best way of saying it. And that's how we are at SaaS Logic. We work for our merchants. It's got to be that way. We are a part of their business. We're no different than an accountant or an employee in their finance team, ensuring that revenue, it's collected. It's billed correctly, invoiced correctly, collected, and then obviously tracked. So I love how you phrased that, and I'm going to steal it. And we're going to use that now that, we work for the merchants.
Perfect. I love it. And in terms of trust, because I think this is also another key element in travel and hospitality in particular, in a lot of ways. Like when it comes to travel, you have time sensitivity, safety, security concerns, hospitality. You're really looking for a home away from home. Maybe on occasion it's just a place to put my head down tonight, but for the most part it's experience based. How at SaaS Logic are you also leaning into this trust component, this personalization component, this experience component?
I think we got a couple of features that I think we're awesome at, and I'm sure every entrepreneur says they're awesome at, you know, certain things. So we're great. Going along the lines of personalization, and again, we're talking about for us, not just our merchants, but their customers. How do we make sure their experience is unique? Because ultimately that trust between our merchants, customers, and the merchant is the most important thing. If that relationship works, and then we continue to do our job, we'll continue to grow with them. We've built out two parts of our platform and have focused on this. First is a customer portal. We want our merchants, customers to be able to log in and work within the subscription, buy more, buy less, pay their invoices, see communications. We want to give them an experience that allows them to have complete transparency and ability to work within the construct of the subscription that the merchants provided them. We provide a lot of flexibility to our merchants as to what they expose via that customer portal, if they want to at all. So if a merchant doesn't want to have one, you don't have to, but it's there for their customers if they want it. The second area that I think we do really well in to build trust is we build a notification platform with about 20 different notification types that are automated or triggered based off of action or inaction within our system. The easy answers are like if your credit card's on file and it's no longer a valid credit card, our system will send you a notification in advance before your auto payment goes saying, hey, can you update it? Yeah, and then if it doesn't get updated and it fails, we'll send you an email, hey, it failed. And so we're really working to create a great communication platform with our notification types to ensure that our merchants have a strong, productive, constructive relationship with their customers and that all the money that's owed gets collected because that's important.
I love that. You know what you're talking about, just these automations and these alerts and this use in some ways of artificial intelligence in order to do that. It really aligns with a series that we've got going on right now, Dojo Live, that's with ProVision Partners, Do More in 24, implementing AI or taking that next first or next step.
I love
AI. And the conversation, you know, artificial intelligence, it's great. Here to enhance your job, not steal it, right? That's our mantra. And last week's show was about this design-led thinking component. How did you at SaaS Logic go about determining these types of, you know, where you were going to implement AI in your offerings, what problems that this was going to solve? Because one of the questions, I guess, to give more context is this idea of avoiding what they call AI washing, right? Because it's this this buzzword right now, and we don't want to do it just for implementation's sake because we might inadvertently cause a bad experience, right? Rather than a good one. So maybe what was some of your approaches in making sure that you were utilizing that in the right area and in the right way?
Yeah, what I love about AI and conversations surrounding it is it's such a broad topic, you know, and I think, you know, what's hot right now is this concept of generative AI and utilizing large language models and kind of the enhancement of employees. I like how you put that, you know, not to replace, but to enhance. You know, SaaS Logic was born from a company called Expeed Software that Rao Chajarla, our founder, also is the founder and CEO of. And that's basically an implementation services team that builds custom software for folks. And so the group that did the backend product management and did the first build have, you know, 20 plus years of experience building tools for large companies and small companies alike. So they're well up to speed on all the different tools that are out there and all the different ways of going. And I'll say one of our positives that we take everything with a skeptical eye to make sure we're not riding the hype wave and just implementing for implementation's sake. And on the sales side, I'm a big fan of just saying, let's add this because somebody said they wanted it. But our team is really good at pushing back and being like, is that really what they want, John?
Like, what are we doing Gen AI? When is, you know, when are we doing that?
You know, there's easy use cases that are on our roadmap they're working on, such as the notification types. Is there a way that we can make every email that's automatically generated from our system have some form of generative AI component so that way it's a hyper-personalized and impactful notification that goes out? But to your point, that's complex. It's easy to say. It's easy to call OpenAI's, ChatGPT's OpenAI API. It's easy to call ChatGPT's API and have it craft an email, but will it be effective? Will it be any better than just a template? We don't know. And so we are working with a couple of our, we call design partners. Some of our earlier members have been with us for a while, and we float ideas past them. We get their feedback. We iterate and build in small sections and say, what do you think about this? And then Expeed, we still have a strong relationship with. They're constantly playing with these tools and telling us, hey, have you thought about this? Or here's something we could do in the future.
I think you hit on something really key there, and that's the constant play, right? Yeah. And just to kind of dabble, get accustomed to it, let it be less scary is another kind of thing that we've talked about.
And I will say, sorry for interrupting, but I'm going to do a little personal story. So when my daughter watches the replay, she can see that I talked about her. Love you, Ella.
Go, daddy, go.
So my daughter's a 14-year-old. She'll be becoming a freshman in high school next year. And the other day she goes, I want to be a travel photographer. And I said, interesting. I'm going on a travel podcast this week. And one of the things that we talked about is just how will generative AI and some of these other concepts change that? Will there be a need for people to travel and take photos, or you just type into a little thing? And we both looked at each other and said, we're still traveling. So even if generative AI like takes these roles and you no longer need to like, you know, be there, it will never replace experiences. It will never replace what us humans do while we're in these beautiful places. Sorry, thank you for the tangent.
No, and I completely agree. And it ties in with yesterday's show as well. I think he says experience is what travel is all about, and you need travel to get the experience. Yeah. And so it's this, I don't know, chicken and the egg kind of conundrum, right?
The hope that I have, and tying it back to sort of with technology, and you look at what YouTube has done, I'll watch sailing shows every Saturday morning. I'll wake up in cold Columbus, Ohio, and turn on SB Delos. And for a few moments of my morning, I'm in some who knows where atoll, where there's just the three of them hanging out. And it gives me that escape. But then it also gets me thinking about, all right, how do I get back to Florida? What can I do, you know, when I'm down in Florida to kind of replicate some of these experiences? And that's where I think the technology and the subscription revenue models will continue to, you know, impact the travel industry. Hook me with SB Delos and keep me in your community and ecosystem to where, you know, maybe they start adding travel packages to their offering, to their Patreon.
Right? Beautiful, beautiful. I love it. You know, we're at the final few minutes of our half hour together, if you can believe it, John. It's gone by fast. And maybe it's felt like an eternity for you. I don't know. For me, it's gone by really fast. Way too fast. And we always like to kind of bring it back to our guests and your sort of words of wisdom that you might have for the audience, right? In terms of your career, what you're experiencing right now in SaaS Logic, in, you know, subscription models. What maybe have you seen that you as an individual or as a company have done really well? Mm-hmm. And maybe something that you think, you know, this didn't work out so well for us and counsel others to maybe not follow suit.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. And then I saw there was a comment that came in to sort of address that within the context of the answer, because it fits great. So thank you for the question about what's fun about the most fun part about working and funding a company like SaaS Logic or founding. Every day is an adventure. You know, when you think about why we travel and why we go explore and climb mountains or kayak rivers, it's because of you never quite know what's around the next turn. Everything is off. Even if you've been on the same trail for a while, everything's new. Every day at SaaS Logic is an adventure. You wake up, you go in, sure, you've got your calendar meetings, but then it's almost like, what do we have to tackle next? Because the list of things to do is never empty. There's plenty to do. Things that we've done really well is really work hard with our customers to understand what it is they're wanting. You can never get enough customer feedback. You can never have enough people in your system telling you what they like, what they don't like. So that's been a huge positive. I think having the Expede team as sort of the engine driving the technology development, you know, they've been working together for years, so they're cohesive. They got processes and plans to make things work. That's kind of vaulted us to the front as well. And I think, you know, if you think about what one thing that I think we would like to work on and just continue to do better, it's how do we really just take all the information and then continue to communicate effectively across all of our merchants? It turns out that, you know, when you're working so closely with people on one-to-one, as your company grows, that becomes a little bit more difficult to do. So we're continuing to work with our internal processes and our teams to make sure our communication to our merchants is top line and what they expect.
I love that. Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much. America, do you have one final question or anything you'd like to add before we say goodbye today?
No, actually, I was wondering, words of wisdom, or it could be another question about company culture, but you answered both. So it was great. It was a great conversation.
Thank you.
Perfect. Well, John, it's been a great time getting to know you, getting to know more about SaaS Logic. If anyone is interested in communicating with you or your company and to take those next steps in terms of, you know, subscription services and how to make that better, easier, more efficient, more personalized, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how might they go about doing that?
Yeah, please visit us at, you know, saaslogic.io. Come to our website, take a peek around. If you can fill out a form there to reach me, my email is john.sarver@saaslogic.io, or you can find me on LinkedIn. If you search for John Sarver with SaaS Logic, I'll show up there. So thank you all.
All right. Thank you. Have a great rest of your week, John.
Well, thank you as well.
Stick around for our post-show wrap-up here in just a minute. But before we go off air, we would like to remind our audience what we've got coming up next week. It's a full week here on Dojo Life.
Yes, the first show that we're going to have is going to be with the company Oryx, with Byron Barea, co-founder and CTO of the company Oryx. The topic is how generative AI impacts the way software is built. How are the developers weaving Gen AI models into their business workflows? That's going to be on Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. And then we're going to have another show, but we don't have the topic yet, with the company Beyond X. This is going to be with Alex.
Barros, I think.
Yes, Alex Barros. That is going to be on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. And on Thursday, the final show is going to be a third episode of our series with the company ProVision. Basically, mm-hmm. It's going to be about deploying AI. Am I correct?
It is the implementation phase. Like we talked about a bit on the show already. We went through the planning session with design-led thinking, and now we're going to talk about implementing. So join us all next week, 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And of course, we've got our recap show on Monday as well. All right. Thank you, everyone. Bye for now.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.